Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Did your parents have a lot of safety rules growing up? You have those kind of parents? Rules like no jumping on the bed, don't swim until 30 minutes after eating, and don't make a face or your face might freeze that way. Don't run with scissors, don't play with your belly button or it might unravel. Nobody? Just me? Okay, I get it. You know what's interesting? A lot of churches have safety rules. If you're around church, you'd figure this out. If you're around enough churches. Safety rules like, don't say anything that might offend anyone because we don't want to lose any people. Don't talk about anything controversial. Safety rules like, don't change anything. Because we like to do things the way we've always done them. And so let's just leave things the way we like them. There are a lot of churches that like to play it safe. They're safe churches. And the problem with that is that God very clearly reveals his design for the church in the Bible. And there is nothing safe about it. Nothing. Today, we're starting this brand new series called The Tribe. We're going to talk about who we are as a church, the different facets of what makes us who we are. And today I want to tell you that we at Verve are a risk-taking tribe. We are a risk-taking tribe. Now, when I say that we are a risk-taking tribe, and I talk about the church, let's be clear that I'm talking about people, and I'm talking about you, right? Because the church is people, right? Verve is you, and you are Verve. And when I say that too many churches want to play it safe, it's because so many Christians want to play it safe. That's what a church is. It's a group of Christians who are committed to God and to each other. And there are so many Christians who want to play it safe. In fact, you hear them, Christians, a lot. They'll say this thing. They'll say, the safest place in the whole world is at the center of God's will. And Christians, they try to create a safe environment to live in because they want to play it safe. And so they create this little bubble that they get to live in. So it's a very safe bubble. And this safe bubble has Christian stores to shop in, Christian books to read, Christian music to listen to, Christian cruises to go on. I kid you not. In case you want to go on a vacation, you can just be with the Christians on your cruise. And it's got Christian t-shirts to wear, Christian mints to eat, because God forbid I eat a mint with pagan Retsin in it. There are a lot of Christians who want to play it safe. And I mean, that's nice, right? Because we want to be safe. It feels good to be safe. The only problem with that is that Jesus does not want us to be safe. Jesus made his calling very clear in the Bible. Jesus called people to come, follow me, and then he said, go. His commands are come, follow me, and go. There's nothing safe about it. Jesus' call demands action. It's a call not to hide and isolate yourselves from the world, but instead to infiltrate the world. Jesus did not call people to come to church and listen. He called people to follow and go. He calls people on this dangerous, risk-taking adventure of a lifetime, called following him. I mean, think about this. What gets you in to Christianity? What is it that gets you in? It's faith, right? Faith is what gets you into being a Christian. Well, what is faith? Faith is risk. That's what faith is, right? Faith is risk. That's what faith feels like. Whenever there's really faith, it means it feels like risk because it is risk. Like if I said to you, go ahead, jump off the building, I'll catch you. That would feel to you like a risk, right? Because it would be a risk because I'm asking you to put your faith in me. Or if I said to you, hey, come here, tell me all your secrets. Now, I know that everybody you've ever shared a secret with has burned you, but you can trust me. Put your faith in me. Tell me your secrets. Telling you your secrets would feel like risk, right? Because it would be a risk, because I'm asking you to put your faith in me. That's what faith is. Faith is risk. It's what faith feels like. And listen, what God is looking for and what God commends are not safe people, but dangerous people. God is looking for people who are willing to be risk takers. The Bible tells us this repeatedly. One of the places, we'll put it up on the screen for you, is Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, where it says, "And without faith, it is impossible to please God." Without faith, it is impossible to please God. And so we could also say, you cannot play it safe and please God. Right? That's what that verse is saying. You cannot play it safe and please God. See, following Jesus does not make my life safe. Instead, it exponentially increases my risk factor. Because what it means to follow Jesus is to surrender my life to him. And what Jesus does with every person who truly surrenders their life to him, he does dangerous things with it. See, Jesus didn't die to make us safe. He died so that we might die to ourselves, so that he could take us where only dead men dare to go, where the living are too afraid to enter. Jesus did not die to make us safe. He died to make us dangerous. There's a story in the Bible. If any of you grew up in church, you probably heard this several times. It's a story called the Parable of the Talents. Jesus tells this story about this rich, wealthy man. And he goes on this journey. But right before he does, he gives some money to three different servants. To the first servant, he gives five talents of money. Talents was just a unit of measurement for money back then. Five talents was a lot of money. To the second, he gives two talents of money. And then to a third, he gives just one talent of money. Goes off on his journey. Well, what happens while he's gone is that the first two guys, they decide to invest the money. They decide, man, let's try to make him more while he's gone. Let's kind of, it's a gamble, but let's invest his money and see if we can make more. We might lose it, but let's try. The third guy thinks, whoa, this is not my money. It's not my money to gamble with, not my money to lose. When he comes back, I need to be able to give him this money. And so he buries his talent to be safe and careful with it. Now, hearing that, you might assume that the moral of the story, that at the end, Jesus commends the guy who buried the talent, right? Because he didn't go off and gamble somebody else's money. He wasn't risky with it. Instead, he played it safe. But that's not actually what happens. At the end of the story, Jesus kind of condemns the guy who buried his talent. Jesus calls him this. He says that he was wicked and lazy for burying the talent. And Jesus commends the two guys who risked their money. Those two guys are the heroes of the story. And you know, reading the story, and when you read it, you find out that these two guys, each of them, invested the money and ended up doubling their investment. They ended up being able to give back to the owner of the money twice as much as he gave them. When you read that, it's kind of like, man, it would be cool to be one of those two guys. You know, that would be kind of cool. But what you may not think about when you read the story is what went into their risk. I'm reading into this story, but I have to imagine that as they thought about doing this, I mean, they were probably like, spent some serious time contemplating, maybe praying, should I do this? It's not my money. What if I take a risk and I have nothing to give them? I mean, I'm going to be in trouble, right? It was a scary proposition. And then once they decided to make the investment, they probably spent like a lot of time investigating the market to try to figure out, where do I invest this money? Once they invested it, there were probably some really sleepless nights, right? What if this doesn't pay off? What if I made a mistake? What if there's nothing to give back to him? See, what we read about in the story is the beginning of the story and the end of the story. But the middle part of the story is actually the longest part of the story, even though we don't read about it. And the middle of the part of the story is all about risk. The whole thing is about risk. And Jesus commends the two guys who played it dangerous, refused to play it safe. You cannot play it safe and please God. You just can't. Following Jesus does not make my life safe. It makes my life dangerous. See, it is true that the safest place in the entire world is at the center of God's will. But the center of God's will is also a very dangerous place. There's a guy in the Bible named Paul. He's sometimes called Apostle Paul. And Paul's this guy who, man, he decided to follow Jesus and he went all in. I mean, he left everything behind. He abandoned himself completely to doing whatever it is that God wanted him to do with his life. And in this book of the Bible called 2 Corinthians, he describes what his life looked like because he so ardently followed Jesus and did whatever God wanted. And so we're going to put the verses on the screen. By the way, if you don't have a Bible, we put the verse on the screen so you're okay. But if you don't own one, we would love to give you one as a free gift. If you stop by the Velcro bar on the way out, the Velcro bar is kind of our connecting place if you have questions or anything. But just grab a Bible. There's no catch. There's no cost. We'd love to give you a Bible. And like Jake mentioned earlier, we have this Bible reading plan. If you want to start reading the Bible, you can submit that. And every day you'll get an email to you what to read and some thoughts. So 2 Corinthians chapter 11, starting verse 23, Paul describes what it looked like for him to follow Jesus. He starts out by saying, "Are they servants of Christ?" And he says, "I am out of my mind to talk like this, but I am more. I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged," means whipped, "more severely, and been exposed to death again and again. Five times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned." Not that kind of stoned, people. I know what you're thinking. Really? Come on. Come on. Seriously, he says, "Once I was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I have been constantly on the move. I have been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my own countrymen, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, and in danger from false brothers. I have labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and have often gone without food. I have been cold and naked." Someone obviously forgot to tell Paul that the safest place in the entire world is at the center of God's will. Because if he was armed with that knowledge, all the danger he was in, all the problems he experienced, it would have been the very first clue to him that he must have been far outside of God's will, right? Unless the center of God's will is also a very, very dangerous place. Several years ago, my family was driving somewhere, going to the store or something, and I don't remember why, but for some reason, this mission trip that I had gone on came up in conversation. I had gone to Laos, and we were talking about what I did on the trip or something like that, and I said to my two kids, who were like 5 and 3 at the time, I said, "Someday, man, I hope to take you guys on a mission trip to Laos." My son, who was 5 at the time, he said, "Not me, Daddy, I am not going." And I said, "Why is that? Why wouldn't you want to go, Dawson?" And he said, "Because I remember that you had to get shots to go to Laos, and I am not getting shots. I am scared of shots, Daddy." And I turned around, and I said to him, "Dawson, you listen to me right now. Listen." I said, "Dawson, you have to make a choice in life. Are you going to follow Jesus or not? Because if you really follow Jesus, Dawson, God is going to always ask you to do things that are scary. And it's going to be way scarier than getting shots. Dawson, you cannot follow Jesus and play it safe. God will lead you on a risk-taking, dangerous adventure that will always be scary. Most men are not men enough to follow Jesus. The question is, do you have the courage to really follow Jesus? Will you do this or not?" And Dawson said, "Daddy, I'm only 5 years old." That was funny. But you know what? It's true. He has to make that decision, and so do you. Most people aren't, honestly, most guys aren't man enough to follow Jesus. Most girls aren't women enough. You gotta have courage that you don't have to follow Jesus, because he will always, always lead you on a dangerous, risk-taking adventure. Always. You read through the Bible, every person, that's the story. Every person. Now, if that's true, if that really is the clear teaching in the Bible, and it is, then why do so many Christians want to play it safe? Why are so many Christians playing it safe? I don't know. Maybe for some, it's a lack of understanding. Maybe they've been taught wrong. They've been taught the safest place in the whole world is God's will. And they don't read their Bible, so they don't know. And it feels good to be safe, right? We like to play it safe. It just feels nice. And so they're fine with that. They just go with that. Maybe it's a lack of understanding. But for others, my guess is that they do understand. They get it. The problem, the reason they're playing it safe, though, is because to play it dangerous, to really follow Jesus, it induces fear. And we don't like to have to face down our fears, right? I want to give you an illustration of this, but to do this, I'm going to need a volunteer. Is there anybody who'd be willing to help me out and just jump up on stage here for a minute? Yes, come on up. That's awesome. Let's hear it for our brave volunteer. There's stairs over there. Very cool. So I want to use you as an illustration of overcoming fear, okay? What's your name?
Shara.
I knew that, Shara. So here's the deal. I don't know what your particular fears are, but they say that the three most common fears of people are public speaking, heights, and dogs, okay? And so what we're going to do is we're going to have you overcome those top two couple common fears by reading the Gettysburg Address on top of this ladder. Okay, so a little public speaking from a height. All right, you can do this. Let's encourage her. Come on, you're gonna do it. Okay, you're gonna overcome these common fears. You don't have to go all the way up, but a couple steps up. Oh, please. See, excuses. Just kidding. All right, you ready? Here we go. Don't worry, they're all just watching you right now. You're the center of attention.
The Gettysburg Address. 4 and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the
promise. Don't look behind you. Don't look behind you right now. You don't want to see what's back there. Keep reading. You're overcoming your fears. Keep going. All right, we'll let you go. Good job, good job. You got it? Awesome job. Good job. Let's hear it for Shara for overcoming those common fears. Way to go. Part of the problem is that to take a risk, you have to overcome fear. Listen, there is no greatness in life without risk taking, but risk induces fear. So what I want to do is I want to teach you the key to overcoming fear in life. It's this. Your willingness to risk is based on potential return. Your willingness to risk is based on potential return. Will you take the risk? Depends on the potential return. Think of it this way. Let's say your house catches fire. It's a flame. You run out, you escape, but then you realize you left your goldfish inside. Who will run back into a flaming house to save their goldfish? No one. How about this scenario? Your house catches fire. You run out, you escape, and then you realize your kid is still in there. Who would run back into a flaming house to save their child? Everyone. Why? Same risk, right? But in that scenario, the return is completely different, and it's worth the return, right? Your willingness to risk is based on potential return. Let's look at it a different way. Let's say I gave you the opportunity to make a bet, like a 50-50 kind of bet, flip a coin, okay? You have to put up $100. Now, if you win, you get $10. Who would put up $100 with a chance of winning 10? Anyone? No one, right? But let's change the scenario. Let's say 50-50 bet, flip a coin, you put up $100. If you win, you win $1 million. Who would take that bet? We all would, right? Even if you're totally opposed to gambling, you'd be like, well, just this once. Did I say I was totally opposed? I mean, just this one time. I'll take this bet just once, right? Why? Same risk, different return, right? Your willingness to risk is based on the potential return. People ask me all the time, Vince, why are you so passionate about church and about God and about this mission to help people find God and experience His love? Because I can't find any place in this world where the return is higher. You find me something with a higher return, I'll quit this and do that instead. Right? But I want to take risks with a high return. And listen, when you're asked to take a risk, and you will be, right? When you're asked by God to take a risk, when you start reading the Bible and you realize, God's asking me to take a risk. When you show up here and I ask you to take a risk, what you need to do is not look at the risk, but look at the potential return. Most Christians don't do this. It's why, why don't most Christians tithe? And God asks us to give generously back to Him. Most Christians won't do it. Why? Well, I don't have that much money, and I need to hold on to it. I can't be giving it away, right? What they're not looking at is the potential return. Lives are changed forever when we give. The Bible teaches us that God, when we tithe, that He blesses us so much we cannot count or contain the blessings. In reality, it is a far greater risk to not tithe than to tithe. But we don't look at it that way because we don't look at the return, and so we don't tithe. Why don't most Christians in churches volunteer? Why don't they serve? The statistics say 20% of Christians will volunteer in their church. Why don't most Christians volunteer? It just feels like too great a risk, right? Well, I just don't have a lot of time to give, and I might get overburdened if I give that time. And what if I try it and I'm not good at it? What you're not looking at is the potential return. Lives are changed forever when we volunteer and we serve. The Bible says that our goal should be to be like Jesus, and it tells us that Jesus did not come to earth to be served, but to serve. But you're not looking at the potential return, and so you're not taking that risk. The reality is, it's a far greater risk to not serve than to serve. Why won't most Christians share their faith and invite their friends to church? We all have people we know and we love and we're friends with, coworkers, family members, neighbors, who don't really know Jesus and aren't experiencing God in a relationship with Him and His love, and yet we don't share our faith. We don't invite people to come and meet Him here. Why? Whoa. Well, it just feels like too big a risk. I mean, what if I don't know what to say? Or what if they ask me questions and I'm not sure how to respond? Or what if they just reject me and they don't want to be my friend anymore because I talked about God or I invited Him to church? What you're not looking at is the potential return. Lives are changed forever when we share our faith, when we invite people to come and meet God here. You know, the Bible says that a party literally erupts in heaven when people start taking steps back home towards God. The reality is, it's a much greater risk for you to not share your faith than to share your faith. But you don't see it that way because you're not looking at the potential return. The return is worth the risk. And the key to overcoming fear so that you can live a great life and be a risk taker is to look at the potential return. Listen, you cannot play it safe and please God. You can't play it safe and please God. But so many Christians are still trying to play it safe. So many churches are still trying to play it safe. And I just want to make this vow to you. At Verve, we will never be a safe church. We will always be a risk-taking tribe. And I've got an announcement for you today. And we had a great 2011. It was our first full year as a church. We saw lives change. We saw dozens of people out back give their lives to Christ in baptism. We saw marriages put back together, all kinds of amazing things. 2012, we're going to see lots more of that, but we are also going to take it to the next level. You guys ready for the announcement? Are you ready for the announcement? All right, so here it is. This year, we, Verve, in partnership with three other churches around the country, are going to start a school and a church in Ecuador. You can clap for that. It's awesome. Specifically, we are going to start a school and a church in a poverty-stricken town called Monte Olivo, Ecuador. Here's the deal. Let me explain what's going on because it's very cool. Some of you may have heard of Compassion International. Compassion is an organization that's been doing what they do for 60 years now, over 60 years. And what they do is they release children from economic, spiritual, social, and physical poverty. They've done this for over 1 million kids in 26 different countries. The way they do this is that they have individuals in America like you and me who give $38 a month. And that $38 a month allows this child to experience all the programs that Compassion offers. Those programs include providing food for that kid every school day, and most of these kids are children who don't have any food, inoculations against major diseases, health screenings and treatments, and education, and that child will be introduced to Jesus. What Compassion has discovered these last 60 years is that for every child sponsored, another 30 people in that town will be directly impacted. So when you give $38 a month, it ends up impacting 31 different people. Well, Compassion has learned in the last 60 years that if they come into a town and implement their programs and there's no church there to partner with, their programs are ineffective. But when there is a church there to partner with, the programs are incredibly effective. And so they decided a long time ago, we will only work where there is a church to partner with. Problem. There are lots of places in this world where there are kids who are hungry and not eating and have no possibility of education and there's no church. And the problem is, there's no church. And so because there's no church, Compassion can't work in that town. Well, there's this other organization called Stadia. What Stadia does is they bring churches together into networks to start other churches. Stadia is actually one of the groups that we partner with to start Verve. So Stadia, 2 years ago, went to Compassion and said, hey, listen, you guys won't work where there are no churches. We bring churches together to start churches. What if we work together? What if we came in and we got a couple churches from America to come together to build a school and a church and get the church started and the school started, and then you, Compassion, came in with all your programs? Could that work? And so this last year, 2011, they tried it in four different towns in Ecuador. It's kind of a pilot program, and they've had phenomenal results. What they found in those four towns is that implementing this deal where they build the school and they build the church and they start the health and they start feeding the kids and all that, typically what will happen in a town is that it will pull at least 2,000 people out of poverty. It's unbelievable. And that generally a couple hundred people will start attending that church right away. It's incredible. And so we are going to do this. What we're going to do is we are going to give money towards the construction of a facility that will be a school 6 days a week and a church on Sundays, okay? And so together we're going to start this church and this school. But check this out, it gets way better. Around September, we're going to have the opportunity, like you guys and me, we're going to have the opportunity to actually be the ones who sponsor the kids in that town who are going to the school and to the church that we constructed. And so we're going to have the opportunity to give $38 a month if you want to do this, and you'll be able to sponsor the very kids who are going to our school and our church. And it gets even better. Check this out. We, starting maybe at the end of this year and definitely next year, are going to be able to do a couple mission trips a year, us, to that town in Ecuador. So you guys are going to have the chance to go to Ecuador to serve at the school, to serve at the church, to help people there, and to meet the kid that you are sponsoring and you are putting through school and in that church and that you're making sure eats every day. How awesome is that? I mean, it's going to be incredible. So there are, like I said, there are four towns where this has already happened, and churches have come in, partnerships of four churches, and started a school and church, and kids who had no food are eating. Kids who had no possibility of education are going to school. Places where there was no church, now there's a church. And we actually have some video of those four towns and what's happened there. So watch this.
Welcome to the planet. Welcome to existence. Everyone's here. Everyone's here. Everybody's watching you now. Everybody. What happens next? salvation is here.
We've been studying what's going on in Ecuador. We actually sent a staff member there last year to go and see it in person, and we wanted to make sure like this is legit and this is really effective, and it is. It is so exciting what's happening there, and I am so excited that we're going to be able to do this. Like, there's going to be kids in the next video who are experiencing life, you know, and whose lives have been put back together, and it's going to be because of God working through us. That's crazy. And so we're going to do this, but I will tell you, it is a risk. The churches that have been doing this are older than we are, more established. Our church isn't even 2 years old yet. The churches that have been doing this are bigger than ours is. Most of them are 800 people, a couple thousand people. Our church, a little over 200 people right now. The churches that are doing this have more income than our church has. Right now, probably a lot more income. And to do this, our church needs to contribute $25,000. And I'm just going to be honest with you and tell you that our offerings aren't so hot right now. In fact, our offerings currently cover our lease at the space and all the related expenses for our facilities, and that's it. Everybody on our staff, you may or may not know this, but everybody on our staff raises their own salary from outside of Verve, and so all of our salary comes from churches and from individuals around the country who are supporting us. All the money that we spend on ministry and on outreach is money that I've raised above my own salary to do those kind of things from churches and individuals around the country. In fact, just another quick little announcement just so you guys can be praying, and since you're my friends, you should know. But I made a decision that I am going to lower my salary and give more of the income that I have raised for my salary to our church so we can do more ministry and cover more of our expenses. And so I'm going to be getting a second job so that I can reduce my salary in that way. So you guys can be praying about that. That would be awesome. And I also tell you that to say, we're not in a great place financially. And so the temptation is definitely to be conservative, right? I mean, let's be careful, because after all, we only have one talent, right? And so maybe we should be careful with our one talent. But you can't play it safe and please God, right? You have to be a risk taker, because God calls us on this dangerous adventure. And so we are going to take the risk, which means that we need to now have an extra $25,000 when we can't cover our own expenses, which is fun. And so there is a risk involved, but that's what we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be risk takers. So here's the good news is we have 6 months to come up with this, okay? So we have till the end of June. Around August will be when it's all done, but around the end of June. So we have 6 months. And that means that gives you guys an opportunity to be a part of this. There's some things that you might start praying about. Maybe you have money in savings and you think, man, I could give some of my savings towards this to make this happen for these kids. They're more important than whatever I'm saving for. Maybe you're going to get back a tax return and you could give some or all your tax return and say, man, I want to be a part of making this dream happen, and I'll give some of my tax return. Maybe you're like, I don't have any savings and I'm not getting a tax return. But the cool thing is you've got 25 weeks. And so maybe what you could do is you could figure out a way to give $10 a week towards this. And so maybe you could think, man, what sacrifice could I make that would equal $10 a week? Maybe I give up Starbucks a couple times a week. Maybe I don't go to McDonald's or something like that. And so that I could give an extra $10 a week for 25 weeks. And over 6 months, that's going to be $250. And I'll feel like, man, I really made a contribution to this. Let me say this. If you give towards this, and I hope you will, it has to be over and above what you normally give to our church, or our church will be in trouble. Okay, so if you say, I'm going to give to this instead of to Verve, that's not going to be a good thing for us. And so if you want to give to this, that would be awesome, but it would hopefully be above what you normally give. So you could write a check and you could put Ecuador on the memo line so we know that it's for that, it's extra for that. Online, if you want to give online, we now have a little thing you can give to Ecuador. And so when you give, you can mark that it's specifically for Ecuador. I'll tell you this. My family has personally committed to give $1,000 towards this. We're going to give $1,000 above what we already give to Verve. And I don't say that to impress you. I say that to let you know we're serious about this. And we're going to have to make some sacrifices to figure out how we give $1,000 towards this. But it's that important. I've already actually had two other families here at Verve who have also said, we're going to give $1,000 towards this. So we're already on our way. And we're going to do some fun things along the way to raise some money too. If you've been coming here for a while, you remember last spring we did a Mike Rayburn comedy concert here, which was really fun. And we did it for free because we could. Mike's awesome and he let us. We're going to do another Mike Rayburn concert on January 27th. And so like 3 weeks from now. And it's going to be $10 a ticket, which is phenomenal. Mike has had a show on the Strip. He's played Carnegie Hall 8 times. And if you go to see Mike, you're paying $100, $200 a ticket. And so $10 is crazy cheap. But the cool thing is every single dollar we bring in that night is going to go to Ecuador, all of it. And so it's going to be another way to raise some money for that. So we're gonna do this. God's going to bring this money together. We're going to make it happen. It's going to be an awesome story. And we're going to do it even though it's a risk. Do you know why? Well, one, because we are a risk-taking tribe. That's what God's people are. And second, because the return is worth the risk, right? Whenever you're faced with a risk in life, you don't look at the risk, you look at the potential return, and you evaluate, is the return worth the risk? Let me tell you this, getting 2,000 people out of poverty, it's worth the risk. Having hundreds of kids, hungry kids who now have food to eat every day, it's worth the risk. Giving kids an education when they have none currently, man, that is worth the risk. Connecting potentially hundreds of people to Jesus, it's worth the risk. Us, you and me, getting to be generous and give beyond ourselves and then get out of our comfort zones and us going on a mission trip together where we end up in this place that we never imagined we'd be, serving in a church and serving in a school and getting dirty and really helping people who need our help. Man, that is worth the risk. And we're going to do it because the return is worth the risk. Listen, here's the reality. You can't be a part of something great without taking risks. You can't have a great life without taking risks. And so I want to conclude by asking this. When's the last time you took a faith risk for God? And what faith risk might God be calling you to take? Maybe for some of you, it's to become a Christian. You know, for the first time in your life, to make this decision, I am going to follow Jesus. I am going to abandon my life to God. For others of you, maybe you've taken that step, but maybe it's taking the next step. Maybe we've got Verve University courses starting again in 5 weeks. Maybe it's saying, you know what, I need to get one of those courses and really get kind of a plan for how to take the next steps in my spiritual journey. For others of you, maybe it's to start volunteering around here. Maybe you've been coming and you love this church, but you're not giving back in the sense that you're not serving and giving your time. And maybe 2012 is your year to start doing that. Maybe for some of you, it's to start tithing, to say, you know what, I need to see the return of giving my money back to God, and I'm going to give to him. Maybe some of you are giving, but it's the risk of saying, all right, I'm going to find a way to give a little bit extra so we can make Ecuador happen. Maybe it's to figure out a way to share your faith with a friend that you care about, or invite them to come here and experience what you get to experience every week. What faith risk is God calling you to take? Maybe it's something bigger. Have you ever had something in your life so big that it had to fail if God wasn't in it? And that's where you want to be in life, where you are just radically dependent on him. And where you realize, I can't play it safe and please God. So I'm going to play it dangerous. Listen, we are a risk-taking tribe. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for being a God who loves us, who has a place for us. Now, if I were you, I would get so frustrated and impatient and probably just think, I've got other ways I can do this. But God, you love us. And not only do you want a relationship with us, which is mind-boggling in itself, but you want to do great things in our lives. But the reality is, man, there is no greatness in life without risk. And maybe a lot of us, we've kind of stopped short of fully following you. We've held back from really committing our lives to this adventure you have for us because of fear. Because we realize that to follow you, man, you're going to bring us on this dangerous journey, on this risk-taking adventure. God, I pray that tonight is a night, and 2012 is a year where the tide changes for us, where we realize, man, there's no greatness without risk. And instead of looking at the risk from the rest of my life, I want to look at the potential return and realize that I want to live an amazing life with God. And to do that, I just can't play it safe. God, thank you for this opportunity that you've given us in Ecuador. Thank you that we're connected to the right people to be able to hear about it, and that we're able to go and investigate it, and that we're going to now be able to do it. It is so exciting to think that the people in this room and the people who come here on Sundays, that together we're going to put a school in this town in Ecuador. It's crazy, and a church, and that there are going to be kids who right now have no food on their plates who are going to have food in 9 months from now, because we're going to sponsor them and we're going to make sure that they eat and we're going to make sure that they get an education. It's going to be life-changing for them. And best of all, we're going to connect them to your love, God, through Jesus, through this church we're going to start. God, thank you so much. It is such an honor that we get to do that. And God, I pray that you would inspire us to be generous and to be a part of bringing this money together, no matter how little or how big our part might be. I pray that once September comes around, that we'll find the $38 a month to be able to sponsor a child and know that we're changing someone's life. God, I look forward to the day where groups of us get to go on mission trips and experience what's happening in Ecuador firsthand and see what we have done. God, thank you for this opportunity. Help us to take full advantage of it. God, we know it will be you who are doing it. And God, we want all that glory to go to you. Thanks for getting to use us. We pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.